Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Before we get started, a reminder that this is the second week of KABU's Winter Pledge Drive. KABU is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. Not only that, KABU has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So help us reach our $15,000 fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. The Mount Hood National Forest has been getting more and more overrun in recent years by throngs who are loving it to death, and this crush of humanity has only become worse since COVID. On the one hand, it's great to see more people getting outdoors and hopefully appreciating pristine nature. But the intensity of these crowds is not good for the forest, and it's not good for anyone seeking solitude and peace in the wilderness. The crowds, coupled with disastrous wildfires in recent years, have spurred Representative Earl Blumenauer and Senator Ron Wyden to propose a huge expansion of federally protected land to disperse crowds and bring logging operations in line with wildfire protection and conservation. Today, we talk with Eric Fernandez, Wilderness Program Manager for Oregon Wild, who has been coordinating with Blumenauer's office on this effort. Eric, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I was very pleased to hear the news several weeks ago that Wyden and Blumenauer are proposing a whole bunch of proposals, actually, to expand the wilderness areas along Mount Hood and also expand the recreational areas. So I wanted to talk today about why that's good news, what that means, and why it's so necessary. So let's just start out with, let's go to a trailhead. Let's say Burnt Lake, which sometimes is parked, has cars parked down for a mile and a half from the trailhead. And you want to go, and it used to be that it'd be like that on the weekend, but after COVID, it started being like that on a Wednesday. So what does that show to you about why we need to rethink our approach to the Mount Hood National Forest?
Yeah, I think that's a great example. You know, the Mount Hood and the Gorge mean so much to so many people. And, you know, I think the pandemic has taught us a few things. And I've felt this myself, and I've heard it from others, that, you know, the things, some of the fundamentals in life that we've taken for granted, like clean water, you know, these are things that we should be doing a better job of protecting. And then, you know, just being able to get out into nature is so important for our peace of mind. It's like, I can handle masks, I can handle not eating in restaurants, but I got to be able to get out to the woods and to rivers and to the mountain and to see the old growth. Like, that's the gonna really ground me and help me get through whatever the world is throwing at us yesterday, today, tomorrow. And I think what we've seen on Mount Hood is, you know, on the one hand, it's awesome that so many people love the mountain. We just need to make sure that the mountain isn't loved to death. We need to try to find a way to have a sustainable plan for recreation. How do we get people to the mountain safely? How do we have the right kinds of trails in the right places? It's not just about the people. We want to have a plan that balances recreation for people as well as for wildlife. So we don't want to put a whole bunch of trails and campgrounds into sensitive wildlife habitat areas. We need to make sure we have trails that are up to the job of handling the demand of all the people that want to go visit them. But we also need to make sure we're putting those in the right places. We don't want to run wildlife off the mountain. And that's a concern. You know, that's a concern we see in a number of places increasingly, that, you know, if you put trails in the wrong places, you disturb wildlife habitat during calving season for elk or for other reasons. So, I think it's really, we need a new plan that is just a better vision for how we balance recreation and conservation and wildlife around Mount Hood.
Well, one of the things that I found really disturbing after COVID started, I hiked on some trails that I've been hiking on for years, and they were trails that were moderately trafficked before COVID, and they became trails that were heavily trafficked. And there were people on the trail that obviously didn't know about being in the woods. And one of them in particular, the Salmon River Trail, had a sign up for a while telling people, like, basically, you're not walking in a city park. I mean, they didn't say that, but it was the tone of, you need to be prepared. You need to have like flashlight with you and matches and warm clothing and carry water and first aid. And it really brought home to me that a lot of people need an education before they go into the woods. And I wonder, if there's anything in this plan that might actually provide for that kind of education besides the signage, which I think is good. But I mean, I talked to Robert Michael Pyle about a year ago, and he's talking about how he thinks people should get a license to go into the woods. Not a popular idea.
No, I'm gonna, don't pin that one on me. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And for those of us who spend a lot of time in the outdoors, understand how to, you know, leave an area better than you found it. It's stuff that we kind of take for granted, but there are a lot of people who are new to the outdoors, and it's not ill intention. They maybe just don't understand some of the etiquette for how to and what to do on trails. And so I think there's some basic education that can happen in a pretty friendly, diplomatic fashion. And I would hope that with the focus on recreation and trails and a trails collaborative, that comes with some education. You know, one of the big ones is just the simple concept of leave no trace. Everything you pack in with you and bring with you, bring that out. You know, that and the golden rule of don't be a jerk, that gets you most of the way there. You know, there are a few other safety things to think about, but some of those basics are important to make sure that everybody has an understanding of, and that's hopefully something we'll see more of in the future.
Well, I was just thinking about all these newcomers to Portland and to Oregon, particularly from big cities, and they may not understand the idea of not having garbage cans, you know, every few feet to put things in. And I was remembering many, many years ago, my partner and I were walking in Forest Park, and we ran into the performance artist Spalding Gray, who was doing a show that night. And he was carrying this box with his lunch in it. And he looked at us kind of helplessly, like, is there a trash can ahead I can put this in? And we said, no, you got to pack it out. And he had this look as a lifelong New Yorker, like, oh my God, how do I do that? So I think that there's another part of getting people to understand the lack of convenience when you go into the woods and that you have to be your own convenience.
Yeah. Just some of those simple dynamics. And, you know, again, it's great to see more people getting out into the woods. I think one of the exciting and kind of new things that this proposed legislation has in it addresses some of those concerns. There are a lot of folks who have been going out to our public lands and enjoying them for a long time. There are other parts of our communities that have not had the easy access to get to them. And so we want to make sure we have an opportunity for everyone who wants to get out to these places. And so, you know, there are a lot of different solutions. There's no one silver bullet that solves all of these problems, but education is one of them. Making it easier for low-income communities to access our public lands, that's another one. Introducing other communities that just maybe haven't thought about it but are now thinking about it, you know, doing education on Leave No Trace and just, you know, helping show people where to go. All of those simple things are really important and shouldn't be overlooked. So I'm excited to see a better plan for that. And part of the backdrop to this is the Mount Hood National Forest has this guiding management plan. That plan was written in the 1980s, finalized in 1990. So that is about as outdated of a plan as you can find for anything. So it needs to be modernized. We need to reconcile all the different things that have changed. Look at climate change, look at the increase in population, what do we need for education. There are a lot of different things and different aspects to this that I think are long overdue. And I give big credit to Congressman Blumenauer and Senator Wyden for stepping up and being willing to try to pull together a number of solutions to make the experience on Mount Hood and the Gorge better for us, for future generations of people and future generations of wildlife.
One of the big differences between the 1980s and now was there was a huge emphasis, it seems to me, in those days under Reagan to do a lot of clear cutting in the Mount Hood National Forest. And I know that your group and BARC, which got started probably around that time, and other groups were fighting cut after cut after timber sale. So I'm wondering if there's going to be a change of emphasis in the new forest plan that would make logging a little less important and maybe make wildlife and natural habitat a little bit more important.
I sure hope so. Yeah. You know, we're still, Oregon Wild is still fighting these logging projects that are overly aggressive on our public lands. Of course, they don't call them clear cuts anymore. They call them cleared forest openings. It's still a clear cut. They might leave a few trees here and there, but they're still happening. We're still fighting those. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. But yeah, we need a paradigm shift for our public lands, and I think this is a part of it. This isn't going to solve all of the issues, but I think this will be a big step in the right direction to say, okay, that old paradigm of our public lands are for logging primarily, and if there's a little bit of wildlife and recreation and clean water, that's nice. No, we need a new vision for our public lands where we have sustainable recreation, we prioritize carbon storing forests, and we minimize the impacts that we're having. We don't love the mountain to death. If you look at the Mount Hood National Forest that basically stretches from the gorge down to about Mount Jefferson, one of the things that would shock people is how many clear cuts have happened on the forest over the years. Shockingly, there have been 2,600 clear cuts on the Mount Hood National Forest over the years. A lot of those come in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, still fighting aggressive logging. The logging companies and the Forest Service and the powers that be have slick new buzzwords to talk about this. I mentioned it's not clear cuts, it's cleared forest openings or temporary meadows. They have a lot of different names. But the other one is thinning. And everybody's like, oh, thinning, that sounds really nice, and that's a good compromise, but it's thinning as long as you leave one tree per acre. You just thinned it. You didn't clear cut it. You left that one tree. So I encourage your listeners to be skeptical when you hear maybe some of these slick buzzwords about, oh, it's just thinning, and some thinning is okay, and some thinning makes sense. We do see that there is some benefit for that, and especially in places that were clear cut 30, 40, 50 years ago, they were then replanted as a monoculture, all the same tree, which is not healthy, and too many of them. And so in those places, I think that's a good place where you can go in and do some thinning. Thinning out of 1,000-year-old trees, not so much. That's the kind of project Oregon Wild's going to fight yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So there's still a lot of threats happening on our forests, in places that people would be surprised. There's a logging project right on the edge of Trillium Lake. There's a logging project right just off the trail of Tamanuas Falls. There are some logging projects on the north side of Mount Hood, some logging projects in the Upper Sandy watershed. So it's not just one exception. It's out there, and it's still a very real threat. So this legislation is needed, and it's needed now.
So, what has motivated Earl Blumenauer and Ron Wyden to propose these changes, major changes in the management of the Mount Hood National Forest?
Great question. I think their motivation is, I can't jump into their head and tell you for sure, but I think they get it. They understand that people want to see a modern vision, that this is a priority for their constituents. People who vote for them, they're not no they're going to hike on Mount Hood to see old growth forests and waterfalls and salmon. No one's going to Mount Hood to hike through clear cuts and heavy thinning projects. That's not what anybody wants to do. So I think they get that, and I think they've seen and heard about the traffic jams that used to be just once in a while around the holiday weekends that are now, like you said, happening on Wednesdays in the off season. And we need solutions for transportation. And I think they understand that. And I think there's a lot of focus right now on what are the climate solutions that we can take and what are the steps we can take here in Oregon. And I think from a climate perspective, arguably the most important thing we can do in Oregon to help slow climate change is to better protect our forests. Our forests are so good at storing carbon for centuries. So we need to change our light bulbs. We need to drive less, walk more. But if there's one thing we can do to really help curb climate change, it's to protect our forests. And I think Congressman Blumenauer, Senator Wyden, they understand that. They understand what people are after on Mount Hood, what kind of experience they want. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that there's going to be some improvements here if we can get this legislation passed.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on Cable Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN and KCB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Eric Fernandez, Wilderness Program Manager for Oregon Wild, about federal proposals to greatly expand the Mount Hood National Recreation and Wilderness areas. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBOO during our Winter Pledge Drive. KBOO receives 80% of our funding from our listeners, but only 10% of listeners are members. Help increase our member ratio and meet our $15,000 goal by going to kbo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. A number of years ago, must have been at least 10 years ago or more, I was hiking on the Timberline Trail over towards McNeil Point. At the same time, Congressman Blumenauer was with the then Oregon Congressional District 2 Congressperson Greg Walden. And I guess Blumenauer was showing Walden why it was important to preserve more of Mount Hood as wilderness areas. We didn't run into them on the trail, but it was really nice when I was up there just to know that they were just maybe a few miles ahead of us. What came of that little hike that Blumenauer and Walden took together?
Yeah, that was one of the more unique political public lands outings that you'll hear about. And I want to say that was somewhere around 2005 when they did that backpacking trip. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 days, bipartisan backpacking trip around Mount Hood. And they had different people come up and meet them at different parts along the trail to kind of talk about different values and concerns and threats. And, you know, it was pretty interesting thing that got a lot of attention, and I give them both credit for doing that and taking the time to really think through what the solutions for Mount Hood are. The result of that was legislation that came to be around right around that time, and that bill passed in 2009. And since 2009, we have been, you know, as many good things as that bill did to help protect Mount Hood, it only addressed some concerns, and a lot has changed since then. The population growth, the increase in people wanting to recreate on Mount Hood has just really exploded since then. Climate change has gotten a lot worse, so we've really needed this overarching plan that I think they're now looking at as a national recreation area with some wilderness protections and some wild and scenic river protections, kind of a multifaceted plan that also addresses climate and transportation challenges. So for the last 10 years, what we've seen is off and on, they've had the congressional members, Wyden and Blumenauer in particular, have held these summits up at Timberline Lodge. They've had some in Portland and in different places where they bring stakeholders together, they bring the public together, they hold these comment periods where you can weigh in and say, here's my vision for Mount Hood and the Gorge, and here's my vision, and everybody gets to weigh in. It's how democracy should be. And then, you know, their process seems to be that they pull together all of that input and come out with a plan. And that's where we are right now, is that they've rolled out this sort of a draft outline, and they put it out for more input a couple months ago. And so I think they're now wrestling with, okay, we got a lot of different input. How do we turn this into specific legislation? And so I think that's where we stand in the process right now. They got over 1,000 comments from people as far as what everybody wants to see prioritized. And so it's an exciting time.
Well, what's in this plan that was lacking in the last plan? We could talk about one particular place. We were talking about it before we started recording, that was heartbreaking to both of us, that it wasn't included in the wilderness area in that original plan. So let's talk about some of the specifics, but also, is there a generally different overall change of philosophy between the two plans?
Yeah, and again, there were some changes that happened in 2009, but we're really, the overarching plan right now is still the one that was written in the 1980s. So that's kind of, we need this new umbrella approach to really solve the issues that we face today around Mount Hood. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think you're maybe hinting at, that, you know, what was missing in recent plans. At the time, Senator Smith, you know, he supported a lot of protections around Mount Hood, and I will give him full credit for that. He also opposed including protections for places like Tamanuas Falls and places like Salmon River. That kind of blow, and the Upper Sandy watershed, that kind of blows my mind.
What were his reasons for opposing that?
I think that he was trying to do what he felt was the right balance of keeping some areas open to logging and other areas be protected. And that plan from the 1980s said Tamanuas Falls area, Salmon River area, Upper Sandy River watershed area. Kind of blows my mind to think about it, but somebody back then thought those areas should be left open to logging, and Senator Smith agreed. Oregon Wild disagreed, and we have been pushing ever since to try to get those areas permanently protected with more of a focus on wildlife, clean water, forest carbon storage. So I'm cautiously optimistic that with the new politics of today, that we can get some of those really special places better protected.
So how would that happen?
A couple of different ways. So the overarching part of this outline that they've announced is this National Recreation Area designation. And then within that, certain areas would have different types of protection. So some areas would be protected as wilderness. And wilderness is really, that's the gold standard when it comes to protecting our public lands. It's a designation that you have to go through Congress to do, but if you want permanent protections for your public lands, that is the way to go. And in a wilderness area, you can go hiking, hunting, fishing, camping, rafting, canoeing, kayaking, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, trail running, swimming, bird watching, all those low-impact things. If you are into recreational bulldozing, wilderness areas are not for you.
What's recreational bulldozing?
Yeah, I know, right? As let's hope that does not catch on and become a trend. So we're really excited about the wilderness protections. There are some other parts of this proposal, some wild and scenic river designations. I think that's a strong protection. It's not quite as good as wilderness, but it's good. So glad to see that in certain places. There's also some protections for a protected buffer around the Pacific Crest Trail. You know, the Pacific Crest Trail is designated as a national scenic trail, but that surprisingly does not bring any protections for the area around the trail. So once you step foot off that trail, that area might well be open to clear-cut logging. And so this proposed legislation would change that, and it would protect a buffer around the trail to tr protect that trail experience, protect wildlife, protect the scenery, and recreational opportunities there. So, a variety of different pieces to this puzzle. I think the one question mark we have that I think a lot of people have is just how protective is that national recreation area going to be? There are some good concepts, and I think there's cause for optimism in what we've seen and heard from Blumenauer Wyden's office. But there's also some nervousness. We know there will be political compromises. We know some people are pushing more logging. So we're a little nervous. National recreation areas, everyone is different. You know, and here in Oregon, we have the Hell's Canyon National Recreation Area, as well as a couple of others. And they all have a very unique, special to that location plan. And so that's nice that they can be sort of personalized to that landscape and the needs. But it also means that there's not a sort of standard set of priorities and protections. So it can be left open to more flexibility, shall we say, for logging. And so we're concerned that there may be enough flexibility that there will be loopholes big enough for log trucks to fit through. And so we're going to be advocating that those are strong protections for the National Recreation Area, but we'll have to wait and see exactly what that looks like.
So as of now, there's no national recreation area at all on Mount Hood. It's just basically national forest or wilderness.
It's primarily national forest with some parts of it protected as wilderness. The legislation that passed in 2009, that did protect a few small areas as a national recreation area. So this would really expand on that and kind of overhaul it, I think, seems to be the vision. So there's a little bit of national recreation area right now, but this would really kind of take that to a different scale.
Well, when I saw that this proposal was proposing this very large national recreation area, my first thought about national recreation areas, I was thinking of Shasta National Recreation Area, which is based around a large reservoir, which involves damming two rivers. And so I've had kind of a negative take on national recreation areas based on that's the main one that I go through a lot. And I wonder, how do we, of course, Shasta Lake is a whole different thing. You're protecting a man-made feature as opposed to natural resources. So how do we make sure that in Mount Hood, a national recreation area doesn't turn out to be like the Shasta National Recreation Area?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that. You know, get involved. Support your organizations that you know are working on this to ensure that it is strong protection for the Mount Hood, that does the legacy of the mountain and the nature around the mountain justice. It's, you know, at the end of the day, we want to believe that science will win and that the most important values for the mountain will win, but we know there will be political compromises. And so people need to be engaged and writing and calling their congresspeople, writing letters to the editor, joining with organizations, becoming members to help support those efforts. I think, you know, the sad thing is, as much as people love Mount Hood, I think a lot of people take it for granted, and the mountain doesn't protect itself. It needs advocates and warriors that are willing to step up and get engaged and become members of organizations, write those letters, show up for town halls, virtual town halls. There, Senator Wyden, for example, has a couple of town halls coming up for Multnomah County in Washington County and Columbia County in another week or so. And you can find those at Senator Wyden's website. And those are on Zoom, so anyone can participate if you live in those counties. Great way to submit a question and let them know what you think the vision for Mount Hood should be in the future. So that's how we make it strong. It's democracy, and we gotta turn people out and make sure that the wildlife, the clean water, and the carbon storage is protected around Mount Hood.
So how expansive would the recreation area be?
The way that they have mapped it, and this could change, the boundaries could change or you know, substantially or just small changes. It would basically cover the area around the mountain, kind of heading up the upper Hood River Valley where it's public lands. There's no private lands affected by this, so that's an important point to make clear. This is just looking at the national forest lands and changing how those are managed. So we're talking upper Hood River Valley, areas around Tamanuas Falls, and then the upper Salmon River, kind of along that Highway 26, Highway 35 corridor, the upper Sandy watershed, along the Lolo Pass Road people might know about. And then a little bit of the Clackamas River down where that the recreation area extends to there. So excited to see some protections for the Clackamas included there. And again, the way a national recreation area works is if that overlaps with an area that's protected as wilderness, the more protective designation wins out. So the dynamic we'll have is wilderness areas protected in the backcountry of the national recreation area.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KPFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. Today we're talking with Eric Fernandez, Wilderness Program Manager for Oregon Wild, about federal proposals to greatly expand the Mount Hood National Recreation and Wilderness Areas. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBOO during our Winter Pledge Drive. KBOO programming focuses on local communities, artists, activists, and people like you. So join now and help us to meet our $15,000 goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to kboo.fm, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I wanted to get a little bit more specific about where the recreation areas are, because people, you mentioned the Upper Sandy and Upper Salmon River, but where are those places so people can really have a sense?
Yeah, sure. So if you drive up, if you're coming from Portland, say you head up Highway 26, you get to we call them the villages, that's Zigzag, Welch's, those cute little towns on the way up to the mountain. If you head to the left on Lolo Pass Road, that'll take you. You can hook up and connect to the Pacific Crest Trail there. You can connect to a handful of campgrounds there in the Upper Sandy watershed. Some great views of the mountain over there. It's a different perspective. As gorgeous as the south side of Mount Hood is, I really love the views, the more dramatic views of the mountain from the north side. So if you haven't checked those perspectives out, definitely do that.
Don't tell too many people about that, though. Actually, those trails have gotten a lot more crowded in the last 2 years also.
They have. And I think that, safety is an important piece of this. And it's a good reminder that, if you are going up Lolo Pass Road, make sure you have a good map. Don't just trust Google Maps. Make sure you know exactly where you're going. Don't so you don't get lost. And a lot of the roads, once you get off Highway 35 and 26, a lot of roads become pretty rough pretty fast. So make sure you've really scouted out where you're heading ahead of time. So if you're going to somewhere like Boulder Lake or Lower White River, make sure you know exactly how to get there and you've read up on it.
I don't know how many times I've given directions to people at the top of Lolo Pass, and some of them looked like they were really far from where they wanted. One person wanted to get to Hood River that way. I suggested they go back to Highway 26.
Yeah. Lolo Pass is particularly difficult because the road splits, and to stay on the road that is the road you want to be on, usually you gotta. It's not intuitive, so yeah, gotta be careful there. And
Actually, at Google Maps actually has the wrong road name. And so did William Sullivan for a while in one of his Oregon hiking books. I think he corrected it finally. But that's one reason why I think people get so lost. Well, another issue that I have with that, and I agree, the north face of Mount Hood is one of my favorite places in the world. But when you go down from Lolo Pass, you start hitting these power lines. And I wonder how that interfaces with expanding recreation and wilderness areas.
Yeah, that's a good question. Kind of on the logistical side of how do you do a national recreation area? And I think typically things like power lines and highways and maintenance of those, that tends to just be grandfathered in. So any maintenance that needs to happen can still happen. You don't the power lines don't go away or anything like that, for better or for worse. Whatever highway maintenance needs to happen on Highway 35 or 26, that can still happen. I know for folks who have been around for a while, Highway 35 goes over White River, and White River is a bit of a rambunctious river sometimes and likes to jump its banks when there's glacial movement and big storms on the mountain. And so it can overflow the highway and really basically shut it down for long periods of time and require a lot of work to fix it. And we haven't seen that in a few years, knock on wood, but this legislation, I think, will be pretty careful to make sure that whatever maintenance to keep those highways open needs to happen will still be able to happen. So I wouldn't expect to see any changes on that front.
Well, let's talk about crowded trailheads, because that's one of the things I understand this wants to address. And I'm thinking about the trailhead to Top Spur Trail. It's off of Lolo Pass. I mean, you actually take another side road and get up to this backside of the mountain. And there's a stretch. It used to be when I first started hiking there, you could always find parking in a parking lot that probably holds maybe 25 cars. But it's another one of these places where, and there's no place to really park on the shoulder, but people do on both sides of the parking lot. How would this proposal address parking congestion at a place like Top Spur, not to mention a place like Dog Mountain?
Yeah, it's going to require different solutions in different places, and I think that's what I hope this plan includes. So, the solution for how do we get more people to, say, the Salmon River Trailhead or the Mirror Lake Trailhead, that's right places right off Highway 26. I think it's going to be a different solution there than it would be in places like Top Spur, which is, pretty far off the beaten track. So I think for those areas that are right along Highway 26 and 35, the vision that Oregon Wild is hoping for is to have more public transportation that's easily accessible, cheap if not free, that gets you from the gateway communities of, say, Parkdale or Hood River or Sandy or Gresham up to these areas all year round. So, I'm thinking of a shuttle service that'll take you from Sandy or all the way up. It'll make a couple of stops at a couple of trailheads, a couple of campgrounds that are popular, and places that can handle a lot of use. We don't want to have a new shuttle service that stops at a sensitive wildlife area. That would be a bad idea. So hopefully,
I can't imagine a shuttle service to Topsparer.
I think that would be a very different solution, and and that one might be a harder solution. None of these solutions are easy, but those trails, some places, the solution might be a larger parking lot. We tend to be a little skeptical that paving over our public lands is ever the solution, but there might be a few places where that does make sense.
Well, there's sort of an example of that that was done. You mentioned Mirror Lake, which I haven't been to since they expanded the parking area, actually moved it, and they changed the trail. I stopped going there because the last 3 years, there was no parking. Forget it. It was like Multnomah Falls. And I haven't been up there, but I'm wondering how you think about that. I mean, the parking lot is immense. And I was told that the trail, it's a longer trail, which makes it a little less attractive for people who like a 1.5 mile trail and jump in a lake on a hot summer day. So, do you think that that was a good solution to the fact that Mirror Lake was like way overcrowded for so many years?
Yeah, I think that's a great case study to see, what were the challenges there. And that was really a safety issue that I think drove that, because you had people parking right on the side of Highway 26 in the summer and in the winter. And especially in the winter, that becomes pretty sketchy because you got snow on the road and people who don't know how to drive on the snow. So really concerned there. And you'd have more and more and more cars lining the highway and parking further out than they should. So the solution was, okay, we're going to close down that parking area on the side of the highway and move the parking to the Ski Bowl parking area, kind of right off on the side there. And so that, I think that, what I like about that is it condenses parking areas and the disturbed areas into one spot, rather than having, big parking lot here, another big parking lot there, and kind of spreading out our parking lots. That just sort of spreads out the impact and means cutting down more trees. So I think there were some benefits to that, and it made it a little bit longer. I always felt like that 1.5 miles to Mirror Lake, it always felt longer to me. I don't know what it is. It's not much elevation gain, but it always felt deceptively longer than that. So sometimes it's nice to have longer trails. Sometimes it's an inconvenience if you liked it as a shorter trail. But I think it's at least an example of a creative solution for how do we solve some of these issues. And I'm sure to solve all of these issues, there are going to be some less than ideal solutions that I might not like, you might not like, others may not like, but for the greater good of how do we get people, everyone who wants to get to the mountain, how do we get people there and get them there safely, and reduce the number of cars going to the mountain so we don't have to have, one, the carbon emissions from all the cars going up, and two, we don't have to build massive parking lots for everyone. So I think that there are a couple different solutions. Mirror Lake is one option. Public transportation is one I'm kind of excited about. And I think having that come up in the wintertime as well, where they're stopping at several different snow parks, might help substantially as well. And then there's other ideas that people have about putting a gondola in from government camp up to Timberline Lodge. For those who've been around for a while, before my time, there was one way back, and it was decommissioned a long time ago, but the path for it is still there. So redoing that idea is a possibility. Some pros and cons to that as well, but if you do that, you maybe have more people parking in government camp, fewer people having to drive up to Timberline. Timberline is a much more sensitive, high alpine area. The last place we want to be putting more parking lots in. So if we can focus development around government camp rather than sort of sprawling it out with parking lots everywhere else, I like ideas like that. But again, it's tricky. There are a lot of tough challenges here.
Well, I love the idea of public transportation up to the mountain, but I have a concern. I was thinking about this morning since I now have a new puppy. One wants to bring their dog to Mount Hood. How would you bring your dog on public transportation to Mount Hood? I was just imagining a bus full of people and like 15 dogs.
I hear a business opportunity here for someone. Yeah, I don't know how you do that. That would be a wrinkle. I think it's incremental gains. If you can get people who are not bringing their dogs up to the mountain, that frees up, using public transportation and shuttles, that frees up more spaces for other people who maybe can't take public transportation for health reasons or pet reasons. But maybe there are other ways. I love the idea of having a pet shuttle service where there's a bus that's pet friendly. That could be exciting in many ways.
Well, there are these daycares where they have the puppy mobile, and they go around, they pick up the dog, they bring him to the daycare. So but it would mean that your dog would ride in a separate vehicle than you would, and then you'd meet them. It just seems a little bit convoluted to me, but.
I wouldn't expect that to be the first idea out of the gate for this legislation, but I wouldn't write it off totally either.
We talk about safety. So, what are some of the other safety concerns that this bill would address?
Yeah, safety is a increasingly important one, and I think there are different angles to that. One issue we've talked a little bit about is people getting lost, people getting injured, and that's an unfortunate part of recreating outdoors is if you're not careful or if you just have bad luck, you can need help. And one of the challenges is how to fund search and rescue. And that's a really big challenge. If you look at Hood River County, for example, a lot of people from the Portland metro area recreate in Hood River County and might end up needing search and rescue in Hood River County. Hood River County is a much, much, much smaller county with a correspondingly smaller budget. And so it's really difficult for a county like that to fund a big search and rescue operation. And so one of the things that's kind of exciting to see in this legislation is an effort to try to figure out how to support search and rescue in places like that. And so I think there's some good ways where they can help with funding and work with the Forest Service and coordinate with other agencies to make sure that we have some of those safety pieces in check. And then, like you said earlier, education is a big part of making sure people are safe. So better to be preventative than have to rely on search and rescue after. But traffic jams and people rushing because they're late or trying to get back, that's no good. So if we can solve some of the transportation pieces, I like to think that that will also help on the safety front.
You're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Eric Fernandez, Wilderness Program Manager for Oregon Wild, about federal proposals to greatly expand the Mount Hood National Recreation and Wilderness Areas. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBOO during our Winter Pledge Drive. KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. Please support this vital community institution and meet our $15,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Well, there's two more issues that you mentioned at the head of the show that we haven't gone into in much depth. One is more about logging, I think, and the other one is wildfire protection. So let's talk some more about how these proposals could really prevent logging. I think particularly we had talked before the show about Tomanowos Falls and how there's still a proposed logging project that's just how many 1,000 feet from the trail or whatever, very close by. So let's talk about some of the areas that are under threat and how these proposals could take away that threat.
Yeah, that's part of the exciting from a conservation perspective. That's one thing that has me excited about this is some of these really important natural areas like Tomanowos Falls, like Salmon River, like Boulder Lake, just spectacular places. I mean, Boulder Lake, you go to that area and it's just the quintessential wilderness experience. You've got the lake, you've got the cliffs next to the lake, you've got the old growth trees, you've got wildlife, you've got wildflowers. Amazing places that really deserve to be protected. So I'm excited to see the wilderness designations as a part of this legislation. That's again the tried and true designation that we know will protect these areas. All other designations that are out there have some level of loopholes. So with the National Recreation Area, I think that's not going to, I suspect, be as protective as we would like it to be on the logging front. I think it will make things better. How much better, that remains to be seen. How much Oregon Wild and our members and KBOO members weigh in on this process to ensure that it's strong protections. I think we'll have to just wait and see a little bit on that front, how much our work is able to move the needle. There will be some amount of logging in certain areas, and there are certain parts of the forest, again, where I think some logging is okay. Thinning out the plantations that were clear cut 30, 40, 50 years ago, I think there's some benefit to that. Put them on a trajectory to become old growth faster than they would in their current state, which is not very healthy monoculture. So I think we'd still be supportive of that, and I'm pretty sure the recreation area will have at least enough flexibility for that. The other component you mentioned is, the fire dynamic and how do you account for fire? And I think they're looking at some creative solutions for fire. And again, to really address fire, it's really should be focused around protecting communities. Fire has a natural role to play on our forests and our public lands, and fire has been a part of the evolution of those forests for centuries. They've evolved with fire, and it may not always look the way we want after fire, but taking the long perspective, it's doing what it would naturally do. And so I think we have to have a plan that accounts for that and recognizes that we may see more fire in the future. And so how do we make sure communities are protected? So the areas right around communities, how do we make those as fire defensible as possible? And so I suspect this legislation will take steps towards that front. How much they want to use the fire issue as a guise for allowing aggressive logging on our public lands, that one I'm a little more nervous about. I think when you look at the east side of Mount Hood, fire plays a different role there than it does on the west side of the forest. And so, the ecosystems are a little different. On the west side of Mount Hood, you have the Douglas fir, cedar, hemlock type forests. And fire is not a common thing there. It's not something you would manage for. Fire would naturally happen every 150 to 300 years. Whereas if you look at the east side of Mount Hood, over by 15 Mile Creek and Badger Creek, very different fire region. And so historically, you would have fire there sometimes every 15, 20, 30 years. So very different dynamic there. And so you have to allow fire to come in more regularly there. I think having prescribed fire is a part of the solution, where under the right conditions, we have the agencies go in and intentionally set fires in the spring and fall to minimize, to reduce some of those fuels and play, help fire play the role that it would have naturally played in the past, so that we can keep things and get things back to how nature intended. That's really what our motivation is here, is what did nature intend for this forest and this mountain? And let's try to get as close to that as we can. Certainly in a lot of places, we're not going to get very close where you've got highways and ski areas, but in those other places, let's do a better job of getting to that. And fire is a part of that equation. And so that's a big piece of it.
Well, actually, I mean, there's been a couple good-sized fires on the west side of Mount Hood just in the last maybe 25 years. There was the Bluegrass Ridge Fire back in 2006, and then there was the Dog Lake Fire, I think, in 2010. And that one, actually, I haven't been as much back to the Bluegrass Ridge area, but I go up, the other place I go hiking almost every year is Vista Ridge, and I've been hiking there since the mid-70s. And I remember when there was a vista, and you could see Mount Hood. You saw beautiful, beautiful vistas from Vista Ridge. And starting about 20 years ago, you couldn't see anything. And it was an example, I think, of a forest that had, I'm not sure if fire was suppressed there at one point, but there had the trees were growing too close together. And after that fire, and I started hiking every summer since the fire, it's amazing to see those views again. And I don't, I mean, it takes a little bit of maybe a change of your taste to be able to enjoy walking through the ghost forests. However, I have a photo in my studio here of this incredible snag. I took that shot a few years ago. I mean, the snags are absolutely beautiful. And so the forest just transformed into a whole other kind of majesty. And it seemed to me that this was a fire that really needed to happen. And I'll say the same thing for the Eagle Creek fire, because Eagle Creek was just being devastated. It was not even being loved to death anymore. It was being trampled to death. And I was just hiking there a few weeks ago, and it's incredible to see all these waterfalls across the creek as you're going up the trail. And I have to really give a lot of praise to the people who've been doing the trail rebuilding, because they did a beautiful job. So it seems like these are examples of fire is really necessary. And I wonder how we work to encourage people to appreciate the fires that have to happen.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I love your story about Vista Ridge, because yeah, Vista Ridge, it has those great mountain views. And it also has those open meadows as you get up higher, and meadows oftentimes don't self-maintain if there's no fire. Sometimes meadows need fire to keep the trees from encroaching and crowding in. And wildflowers, I mean, that's a big part of the story in all of the most of those places you just mentioned. And usually fire is good news for a lot of wildflowers. So you'll see them really come back quickly just that very next year and have more areas where they can have their shows, especially on places like Vista Ridge. So fire has a unique and interesting role to play there. And fire also helps on other fronts. Fire helps to maintain huckleberry bushes and openings where huckleberry bushes can grow. And that kind of brings in this whole other part of this proposal where, you know, Native Americans rely heavily on huckleberry bushes seasonally. It's a very important cultural food. And so fire's connected to that and has always been for a long time. So I think, you know, we see that in this legislation. There are steps encouraged to, one, make sure that tribal treaty rights are protected, but also to ensure that cultural foods are factored in and there's coordination. And that's a little different. There's always some language in most public lands legislation that addresses tribal treaty rights. But this legislation takes it a step further, and I think that's kind of interesting to see. That's, I think, one of the two places where this legislation is kind of unique in that it takes that coordination a step further. The equity piece of this, where it is looking at making sure that all the communities that want to be able to access our amazing public lands are able to access them. That's something you don't usually see in public lands legislation. So some new and exciting twists to this that I'm glad to see, and I think a lot of other folks are as well.
So how can people get involved to make sure that this plan follows the desires of so many people who love Mount Hood and who are not loving it to death?
Yeah, that's a great question. So folks are welcome to become members of Oregon Wild, Friends of the Columbia River Gorge, BARC, Pacific Crest Trail Association, Thrive Hood River, a lot of the organizations that are involved in the effort to protect this area, Vive Northwest. And then also, you know, as I mentioned, Senator Wyden has some town halls coming up online at the end of the month, and that's another great way to weigh in. People can write letters to the editor, and also just reach out to Oregon Wild, get on our email alert list. We let folks know how you can get engaged as things are happening, you know, to make sure that this really is a plan that does the mountain justice. It protects the fish and wildlife that call it home. It allows for us to, as humans, to have sustainable recreation where we're minimizing our impact on the landscape. It helps curb climate change, provides clean drinking water. Some really important pieces here that if we're all engaged and doing our part, we can do the mountain justice.
Well, we have a link to Oregon Wild and to the page about Keep Mount Hood Wild on the Locust Focus website. So people can go there, and I imagine from there that'll take them every place they need to go.
Yep. Definitely.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for being on Locust Focus. It's great to talk to you. I want to hear how this all transpires, so let's stay in touch.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We've been talking with Eric Fernandez, Wilderness Program Manager for Oregon Wild, and you've been listening to Locust Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle Stations KBFT LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locust-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us during our Winter Pledge Drive by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Joe Courtwright about what's going on with the Oregon Department of Transportation. We'll go out with some music by Abby Lincoln. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, wash your hands, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance when necessary and wear a mask.
I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Though I know that evening's empire turned into sand, vanished from my hand, left me blindly here to stand, but still not sleeping. My weariness amazes me, I'm branded on my feet, and I have no one to meet, and the ancient empty streets stood dead for dreaming. Just escaping on the run, and before the sky there are no fences facing. And if you hear vague traces of skipping wheels and rhyme to your tambourine and time, it's just a ragged clown behind. I wouldn't pay it any mind. It's just a shadow.